Morning, everybody. So we're going to get started in 1 minute here because we've got 40 minutes, and we're going to cover in 40 minutes what I usually do in two 40-minute workshops. So this is going to be the speed reading workshop here to talk a little bit about LTEs and also about op-eds and getting published. How many of y'all downloaded the conference app from Grenadine? Okay, good. If you haven't done that, I recommend that. How do you do it? So you go to your app store, and you go to, you search Grenadine, download the app, and I believe it's, you put in the code CCL 2016, and it'll pull up all of our stuff for the conference, including, there's a menu, and if you click the menu, you'll go to resources, and there are handouts for the various workshops that you can download on that app. And so included in those handouts that are available for downloading are some tips, the hierarchy for things that you look for with, in submitting letters to the editor, looking for letter to the editor opportunities, and there's also a tips for writing op-eds. Yeah.
Is it Grenadine or Grenadine Event Guide?
Grenadine Event Guide, yes. Yes, yes, that's it. So, so anyway, I think we are at 10:15, so let's go ahead and get started. So what we'll do is we'll go through, and I'm going to try to time this so that I can devote half my time to the letters and half to the op-eds. But so we're going to talk a little bit about why we want to get letters to the editor published and how to be successful at doing that. And then we'll talk about op-eds. That's kind of like the next step up from letters to the editor. And so let's just go ahead and jump in here and get started. So here's our agenda for the LTEs. Talk about the importance, the news hierarchy of things that you look for in your newspaper for letter to the editor opportunities. And I'm hoping I'll be able to get through this quickly enough so that we'll have time for questions, but we'll see about that. So but the only way that we'll be able to get through this in 40 minutes is to just kind of run through everything. If you can hold questions till the end, that'll be good. So so what's the importance of letters to the editor? So we've got the thing is, the newspaper feels, they print what they feel is newsworthy. And they also, they look at the volume of letters that that come in on a particular issue. And so it's important not just to submit letters, but to also get a lot of people in your group to submit letters to the editor, because not only does that improve the chances that one of your letters will get printed, but it also signals to the editors that this is an issue that's important to their readers. So you might end up seeing more coverage for that. And you can also provide more visibility for your group. So if you're, sign your letter as a volunteer or the leader of your chapter or something like that, all of a sudden the people in your community go, oh, who's this Citizens Climate Lobby? This is something I'm interested in. I need to get a hold of them. So over on the other side here, yeah, so this signals that our topic is newsworthy and so forth. And it also signals to our members of Congress that this is something that's important to the people in his district. I think letters to the editor are probably one of the most powerful things that we can do in terms of generating political will. I think Chris Gibson, Congressman Chris Gibson and Senator Whitehouse were doing a roundtable meeting with business leaders, and they said, well, how can we generate this political will? And they mentioned Citizens Climate Lobby, and the number one thing that they said was generating letters to the editor on a particular issue. So first thing that you need to do to get a letter to the editor published in your newspaper is to read the newspaper. that's step number one. You just can't sit down and write a letter and expect that it's going to be published. And these days, there's a lot of people who don't read the newspaper, but I recommend that you read the paper. You can do it pretty cheaply. A lot of newspapers have e-subscriptions where you get a reproduction of the print paper in electronic form, and those subscriptions are pretty cheap. But I recommend that you have at least one person in your group who subscribes to the newspaper and looks every day for letter to the editor opportunities. They can be articles, and we'll talk about that that little hierarchy here in just a second. But it's very important to be looking at the newspaper every day, because I guarantee you, in the course of a week, you'll find at least two or three really good letter to the editor opportunities in your newspaper. So I have this hierarchy of things that you look at in your newspaper for letter to the editor opportunities, and the higher something is on that hierarchy, the better your chances of getting published. And so first thing you want to check in your newspaper is the editorials. This is the official view of the newspaper, and so letters to the editor that are responding to the official view of the newspaper, they're going to get top priority in terms of publication. Right behind that, a close second would be front page stories. And so if a newspaper decided, hey, it's important enough to be on our front page, they'll probably decide that letters responding to those stories are important enough to go in the newspaper too. So then after that, you've got staff-written columns, and these are distinguished from syndicated columns like George Will and Paul Krugman and people who get disseminated in newspapers all around. These are actually the staff writers for the newspaper, and they're kind of like the brand of the newspaper. So anytime there's a letter to the editor responding to their, one of their staff columnists, it's almost like running a little promo for the newspaper. So they like letters on that. And then after that, you've got the local op-eds that are published in the newspaper. You can respond to those. And editorial cartoons. A lot of times, it's amazing how many editorial cartoonists do cartoons about climate change. So you can, and the newspaper will publish letters about the cartoons that are on the editorial page. And then moving down that hierarchy a little bit then, we've got the syndicated columnists, as I was mentioning, and then other letters to the editor. We just had a letter to the editor in the Atlanta newspaper that was responding to a, shall we call him, a climate skeptic letter that was published in the newspaper recently. Yeah, they'll print letters responding to other letters to the editor. And then there's also, at the bottom of that hierarchy, but still effective, are inside news stories. These are stories that aren't on the front page, but they might be on page two or three or somewhere inside that A section, or they might be in some other part of the newspaper as well. So moving on here, what's the formula for drafting a letter to the editor? Once you've discovered your letter to the editor opportunity, how do you want to structure that letter? So the letters usually are pretty short. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution, they restrict it to about 150 words, which is pretty short. It's like three short paragraphs. So I kind of call it like the haiku of advocacy, because you don't have a lot of space but you can basically get in there, make one really good point, and get out. So the first thing that you want to do in drafting your letter, in terms of the form that you want it to take, is to immediately reference the story or the opinion piece that you're responding to at the very beginning of the letter. So and sometimes you can they like to get their ego massaged a little bit. If you can say, oh, hey, that was, thanks for, writing or publishing this article or something like that, that might help a little bit. So then right after you've referenced the thing that you're responding to, transition into how it relates to the problem of climate change. Because you might be writing about an article that doesn't actually say climate change immediately, but somehow or another you can relate it to it. You know, like a, you know, stories about you know, wildfires or floods or something like that. And so it's up to you then to reference that story and then connect the dots to the issue. So you want to make that transition to the climate issue, you know, once you've referenced the story. And then go in and identify the solution. And of course, we all know what the solution is. It's to put a revenue neutral fee on carbon. Ooh, we're off to the races. All right. Okay. And it's always good to have a call to action for people. You can and sometimes you can ask the public to contact their members of Congress, or even a better call to action would be to ask your member of Congress to take some action by sponsoring or supporting legislation for carbon fee and dividend. And then you want to wrap up your letter. You want to have a close at the end of the letter. A pretty good technique for closing out your letter is to circle back to the beginning of the letter somehow. And that's a good way to close a letter. If there's some kind of clever little turn of the phrase or something like that that you can do, it's always nice. You want to have a nice strong finish with the letter. Those will really help you get published. The people who edit the letters to the editor, they like well-written letters. Sometimes they don't get a bunch of well-written letters. And so, you know, if you've got something that really sings, they'll look at that and go, oh, hey, this is great. I want to run this letter. So then after that, let's see, what are we looking at? Here are some of the things that we want to be, careful about when we're writing letters. I'd stay away from the hot button issues. A few years ago you had, the Keystone XL pipeline was a very polarizing issue, and so forth. Fracking is a very polarizing issue as well. You know, try to stay focused on what we're about, and not get into things that are going to immediately put people in different camps. We want to bring people together, not kind of pull them apart. Write very conversationally. Don't just regurgitate a laser talk. As I mentioned, it's really effective if you can mention your member of Congress, because their staff does a Google News search on their boss every day to see if their name pops up in the news. So that always helps. And as we always do, be respectful in what you're saying. And don't try to do too much of the doom and gloom thing, because we found that a lot of times people just sort of shut down, when we start talking about, oh, the apocalypse is near, and that kind of thing. But if you are going to mention all the big problems that we have, always make sure you have a solution in there. Give people some hope that we can do something about it. So I also recommend that you form a team of letter writers in your group. We've done that with the Atlantic groups. We have probably at least 7 or 8 people who agree, yeah, I'll write letters to the editor if you tell me what the opportunities are. So you have somebody who checks the newspaper every day, and when they see a letter to the editor opportunity, they can send it to your team to have a number of folks submit letters to the editor. So like I said, submitting several letters to the editor will improve the chances that at least one of your letters is going to get published, because that's what the letter editors do. If they see that there's a number of letters on an issue, they say, oh, well, then we should be running something on it. If there's only one letter, your chances diminish quite a bit. What are some of the other things here that you want to do in terms of your team here? You want to get, like I said, assign at least one member to read the paper every day. But even if your letter doesn't get published, if you have 3 or 4 people submitting letters, the person who got the letter published, like in basketball, they get credit for scoring the basket, but you get credit for an assist. You're the one that actually passed the ball to them, so to speak, and they were able to score. Without your assist, they might not have gotten published there. So I really recommend forming teams with your group. It'll really up the ante in terms of the number of letters to the editor that you're getting published. So what do you do after the letters get published? Is your job done? No. You want to make sure that letter to the editor, when it gets published, gets to the office of your senators and your representative and so forth. So what you want to do then is, whoever is the person who is monitoring the papers, they're probably, I recommend that you have somebody designated in your group who is your media coordinator. And then once, not only would they look for the letter to the editor opportunities, but they would also, once something is published, make sure that the liaisons in your group get those letters, those published letters to them, so that they can then share them with the congressional aide that they communicate with. If you're mentioning your letter, your member of Congress in the letters, good chance they're going to see it. But don't assume that they're going to see it. Make sure that gets to the people up in Washington, who are the decision makers up there. And also make sure that a field report gets filed on it. We like to, have a good tally of, where we're getting published and how many letters we got published. If you were on the conference call last week, the national conference call, we kind of did a little calculation of what those letters to the editor are worth in terms of, like, if you had to buy advertising space for it, and the letters to the editor, when you really break it down, we had over 3,000 letters to the editor published, and if the average letter takes up about 5 inches of space in a newspaper, we're guessing that's probably worth about $3 million. You probably have to spend $3 million a year to get the kind of influence that we get by publishing all the letters that we do. And of course, tell your chapter leader when you get a letter published, and celebrate those letters at your meetings. So let's move it. I'll tell you what, I'll take maybe one or two questions on the letters to the editor. Yes?
How soon after something comes out in the paper does the paper have to receive that letter to the editor for it to work?
Good question. I would say you... She said, how soon after an article appears in the paper should you send in a letter to the editor? And I would say the shelf life, so to speak, for responding to something is about 1 week. I would do it immediately. If you see the opportunity, send the letter off right away, because you never know. Somebody, there might be a climate denier out there who fires off a letter right away, and they're the one that gets published instead of you. So, yeah. Terry?
I started being the person who sends out the emails, and I'm struggling with how many contacts are appropriate.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand people. How many would you advise?
I would get agreement from the people who are going to write letters to the, just don't send it just to your whole group list or something like that. I would just get a group of about 6 or 7 people. Because out of those 6 or 7, maybe 3 or 4 will submit letters, and I think that's a good number of submissions for letters to the editor. But I would say 6 to 8 people who have agreed to send letters to the editor. I think that would be a good size.
She was
asking how big a team would you want to have for submitting letters to the editor. And I was saying about 7 to 8 people would probably be a good size team, but they have to be people who have agreed to send letters to the editor. I'm going to take one more. Let's see, we had a guy. You had your hand up for a while back there.
If you get a letter published,
do they keep track of who's done it and not publish it again for a period of time?
Yes, yes. So typically a newspaper will, you know, once you get a letter published, you probably won't be eligible to get another letter published for at least a month, sometimes maybe 6 weeks or so. So, and that's why it's important to have a team of people. And doesn't mean you can't write it. You can go ahead and draft a letter and, you know, get somebody else on your team to submit it if you want. You know, that's that'll work too. But yeah. Yeah.
I don't need it if it's a different subject.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No. No. If you've had a letter to the editor published, they're not going to publish a letter from you, probably for at least a month. Let me see if I've got time for one more question here. No. I'm going to move on here to the op-eds section here, because this is where, you know, it gets really good. So we'll talk about you know, the process for drafting a letter to the editor, and I'm hoping we'll have some time to show you some examples of some of these different approaches for drafting op-eds. So here's the process. So the first thing you want to do is determine what you want to write about and how you are going to write about it. So you definitely want to relate to something that's in the news. The newspaper, just like with letters to the editor, there are you know, op-ed opportunities. So if there's something that's big in the news, you know, like for instance when the Pope visited you know, the United States you know, back in 2014, a lot of coverage on that. Great opportunity for submitting an op-ed to your newspaper. So here are some of the things that you can be looking at, that you can riff off of in terms of drafting your op-eds. There may be some big report that comes out, you know, and you know that shows, you know, what's happening with global warming or something like that. Something that might have been actually made the news. It could be some big disaster. If you know, all of a sudden you get 10 inches of rain in a 24-hour period, you're going to have some pretty bad flooding, and that would be an opportunity to come in and talk about you know, the fact that climate change is making those sorts of weather events you know, more frequent. And then there's also annual events. So you've got you know, things like Earth Day, or of course there's the annual climate conference, UN climate conference that happens every year. State of the Union address, you know, things like these are things that happen every year. They're on the calendar, and you can kind of, you know, circle those dates and say, oh, this is going to be a time when I'll have a good opportunity to submit an op-ed to the newspaper. So then, you know, once you've decided what you're going to write about, then you can take several different approaches to writing about it. So there's the straightforward kind of presentation of facts, you know, which is fine. There's the personal story, where you can kind of sort of focus in on an individual, you know, who's been affected you know, by climate change or something like that, and use them to kind of do a close up on the issue. And then once you've done that, just kind of, as they, you know, in cinematic terms, sort of pull the camera back a little bit to then you know, expose the bigger picture that you're talking about. And then there's the first person narrative. So you all are here in Washington. This is like the perfect opportunity to do the first person narrative. You're going to go to the Hill on Tuesday. You're going to be talking to your members of Congress. Great opportunity to write a first person, sort of like a Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of story that you can do for your newspaper. So those are some of the approaches that you can take when you're drafting an op-ed. So then once you've decided what you're going to write about and how you're going to write it, you know, what do you want to do? I recommend that you create an outline. You know, just do like six or seven, you know, bullets of, you know, from your opening to your conclusion, and then because that'll be your roadmap. You know, instead of just, you know, starting to write and trying to figure out where am I going to go with all of this, go ahead and do an outline, and so you already have your roadmap. And then when you get stuck, it's kind of like, oh, what do I want to say next? Oh, I can go back to your outline and go, oh yeah, this is where I want to go. So make an outline, and your outline then sort of becomes your shopping list for your research. Because so these are the things that I want to say. So where's my information to back up the things that I want to say? So then you can kind of, you know, do your online research on to get your facts and everything all together. And you want to do that ahead of time. There's nothing that kind of slows down the writing process than going, oh, well, I want to say something about this, but I don't know anything about it, so I have to look. Do your research ahead of time. Read as much as you can going into it. So it's almost kind of coming out of your ears or something, and the words will flow very easily. Some other good suggestions here in terms of, you know, writing your op-ed. You want to be compelling right from the start. You have, you know, probably about, you know, you've got your headline is going to be your first entry point for the reader. Then after that, you've got, you know, your opening paragraph. I'd say you've got about maybe two or three sentences to grab the reader's attention. And if you don't say something compelling right from the start, it's a big newspaper. They'll move on to something else if it doesn't look interesting. So you definitely want to do something that says that's kind of provocative and informative, that says to the reader, well, makes the reader say, okay, you've got my attention, now tell me some more. And here's a little example of an opening here that would probably make people want to continue reading. You know, when the September floods hit, my husband and I were away on a two-month walking holiday in Spain. The first inkling that something was amiss at home came in friends' Facebook posts. You know, so that kind of raises all these, what happened? You know, and people want to find out more. So do something that kind of, you know, piques the reader's curiosity and makes them want to continue reading. So then that kind of gets into, you know, creating kind of a natural flow for your op-ed. And so every time you make a statement in your op-ed, what's going to happen is it will raise in the reader's mind questions about what you just said. And so a good technique for drafting your op-ed is to anticipate the reader's questions and then answer them. And what'll happen with this is this will create a very natural flow that will be easy for the reader to follow. And you know, a lot of times and a good technique sometimes is to actually just pose a question to the reader, like, you know, how can we tax carbon without it becoming an economic burden on American families? You know, so and the thing about that is, you know, when you ask a question, you know, when people read a question, you know, they start, oh gee, what's the answer to that, you know, and then you provide the answer for it. So then, can you know, what else do you want to have in your op-ed? Well obviously you definitely want to have a local angle or several local angles in your op-ed. Newspapers, generally speaking, are not going to publish an op-ed that somehow does not relate to their community. So what you'll want to do is talk a little bit or include in your op-ed, you know, what's the local impact of climate change. It might be, you know, that you have droughts in your area, or it might be that there's wildfires or floods, or if you live on the coast, you've got rising sea levels. So you can bring in, you know, the local impact, and you could also talk about the local opportunities. You know, what are the opportunities economically for our community if we start transitioning to clean energy? You know, is there's, you know, lots of jobs that we can get with, you know, solar or wind or something like that. stay focused. You know, resist the urge to say too much. You know, a lot of times you go, oh wow, I've got 700 words here. I'm going to say everything I ever wanted to say about climate change and the solution in this one op-ed. You don't want to do that. You want to stay focused. You want to just kind of pick, you know, just a few points that you want to make, back them up with the facts, you know, and as I said, go deep with the things that you want to focus on. And, you know, don't worry. If they publish your op-ed and they like it, they'll want to have you write some more op-ed, so you can save some stuff for later. You know, don't try to say it all in one op-ed. So as with the letters to the editor, we always want to have some kind of call to action for the readers, you know, whether it's contacting Congress about you know, the solution, or even speaking directly to your member of Congress about, you know, supporting our solution or something like that. But you always want to include some kind of call to action in your op-ed, and you want to finish up strong. You know, there's nothing that kind of takes the wind out of your sails, so to speak, than a weak finish. You know, something that just kind of trails off at the end. So at the end of your op-ed, a good rhetorical technique is to repeat the main point, to sum up what the main point is that you were trying to make in your op-ed. As with the letters to the editor, you know, circle back to the beginning, and you know, see if you could kind of come up with a little, you know, clever you know, turn of phrase or something like that to finish with. But you want to finish. You know, that the last thing that the reader reads is what's going to stay in their head, and you know, so think about that. You know, think about, okay, this is probably what's going to stay in their head. I want, you know, what is it that I want them to retain? What is it that I want them to remember? You know, and make sure that that's at the end of your op-ed. See how we're doing on time here. So we've got, it's a 40 minute. Let's see, and it started at 10. So we've got 10 minutes. Okay. So you want to do a quick quality check on this. And here's how you can tell if you've got a good op-ed is whether or not you can write a headline for it. See, if you can't sum up what you're trying to say in about 8 words, then you've got a problem. You know, in other words, you've got a clarity issue about what it is that you're trying to say. So, you know, can you write a headline on it? And you definitely want to include a suggested headline in your op-ed. A lot of times the newspaper will run the headline that you suggest. If you leave it up to the copy desk at the newspaper to write a headline, you can end up with a bad headline. And you're kind of like, why did they say it? Well, because you didn't give them a suggested headline. You know, so you want to definitely do that. What else have we got here? Wait, that moved the wrong way here. Okay, so I want to definitely save some time here for some questions here. So there's different techniques that you can use. One technique is called the extended metaphor. So everybody knows what a metaphor is. It's a figure of speech containing an implied comparison in which the word or phrase ordinarily and primarily used of one thing applies to another. And so here's an example of the extended metaphor. I don't know if you can read what's up there. I hope you can. So we use the metaphor you know, that I called, you know, club fossil fuel. You know, it's everybody's favorite watering hole because the libations are cheap. You know, but they're cheap because, you know, the cost is pushed on to somebody else. You know, just read this paragraph here. It's the most popular franchise on the planet. Everyone's favorite watering hole for well over a century because the addictive libations, coal, oil, and gas, are relatively cheap. Cheap, that is, until you factor in the hidden costs, like asthma and other respiratory diseases from air pollution, or the military costs to secure our supplies of oil from the Middle East. And so we use this metaphor throughout the piece, you know, this club fossil fuel thing. So that's an example of you know, kind of an extended metaphor. The personal story. We had a piece that was published about a young coal miner in Illinois who lost his job. He was laid off because of the drought there, and he ended up getting a job in the solar industry. So it's a great story. So, but that was a good personal story, and it really played well. We got it published in a lot of several papers in coal country there. So personal story is a good approach for an op-ed. And the local angle, as I said, is very important. Brian Etling, he's a ranger with the National Park Service. He works at Crater Lake. And let's see, what did I do here? Yeah. And so he talked, quite a bit about the effect of, diminishing snowpack at Crater Lake in Oregon. The first-person narrative, we sort of touched on this one at the beginning, with the CCL volunteer who was away on vacation, and then she found out that the devastating flood that happened in Colorado a couple of years ago. And then there's the annual event, Earth Day, April 22nd, happens every year. Great opportunity to get an op-ed published. So. Let's see, I think we've got just a few more minutes here. Let's see, it started at, so I think we go to 10:55. So we actually got a few minutes for some questions, yes.
How long should an op-ed be, and how do you get a newspaper to publish it?
Okay, so your newspaper will generally have the recommended length for an op-ed. It usually goes anywhere from 500 words is usually the shortest, usually tops out around 800 words or so. So the average op-ed is about probably 650 words or something like that. If on the newspaper's website you don't see any guidelines for submitting the op-ed, what I would do is go to the contact page on the newspaper's website and look for the person who is the editorial page editor and email it to them. Just have them, and I would recommend you don't do it as an attachment. Do it as a cut and paste onto an email text. Have a little, just a short note at the top. Please, consider this op-ed that relates to something that's happening here, and so forth. And there you got your headline and your op-ed following it, and just send it to the editorial page editor. You might even follow up with a phone call if you don't get a response. Follow up with a phone call a day or two later. Just ask them, hey, did you get my op-ed? Are you going to consider publishing it? Yeah. Who else? Let's see. Yes.
How about using quotes? Say, according to the Citizens' Climate Body, or according to the EPA. Da, 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 da.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You definitely. So he said how I think it's more like your question is kind of citing sources for things. Yes, it's very important that when you're putting your facts into a piece, that you tell the reader where you got your facts from. So definitely you want to cite your sources. Whether it's government source or Citizens Climate Lobby or according to the REMI study or something like that. You definitely want to cite your source. I'm going to kind of go back and forth here. Yeah.
Okay. So this goes back to the letters to the editor section specifically. This is a two-part question. One, I'm in New York City. Writing to the New York Times seems like a fool's errand in a way. Is it still worth, and that's a national situation,
right.
It's still worth
Absolutely. So let me answer that, and then I'll let you answer the second question. Yeah, by all means, we get letters to the editor published in the New York Times several a year. We get letters published. It's a little tougher nut to crack, but when you do, it's great. A letter to the editor in the New York Times, that's like that's easily counts as like an op-ed or something. But it's definitely worth doing. Yeah. And then what was the second part of your?
Second thing. Is especially with now the digitization of newspapers, there's op-eds, just letters to the editors, but there's also online comments.
Right, the blogs.
And, or especially, I'll use the Times as an example, but you can comment on
Maureen Dowd's column or Paul Krugman's column.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically, yeah. Okay, so what I would say about that in terms of influencing your members of Congress, I don't think comments on blogs carry a lot of weight. But what's good about the comments is that you can kind of get ideas and suggestions to the writers, you know, and they might think, oh, that's good stuff. I should actually write about that. You know, so you might be able to influence the columnist a little bit to consider our solutions. That's what I would say about that. I wouldn't spend a lot of time on comments. I would put more time into drafting and submitting LTEs and op-eds. Yes?
Is there any way to actually gauge or measure the effect of getting letters in a different editor or commentaries published? Seems like obviously a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say more than that?
I don't know exactly how you measure that. All we know is that, you know, the feedback that we've always gotten from congressional offices is that, you know, letters to the editor, you know, do carry a lot of weight. As I mentioned at the beginning, you know, Gibson and Whitehouse, you know, that was the first thing that they cited with the corporate folks, you know, who wanted to influence Congress. You know, they said, yeah, I want to get LTEs. Like, Susan, what's your question?
Well, actually, I want to respond and say we have a lot of new members who read letters to the editor and newspaper that decides to find them. So that's something we can measure.
Yep. Okay, so we are at 10:55. Is that when this is supposed to end, Susan?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to sneak one more in here. Yes.
Real quick. Letters to the editor to several newspapers at once.
You can get away with that. yeah, you can. Yeah. She's talking about, you know, submitting the same letter to several newspapers. Yeah, you can do that. A lot of times, what the newspaper will ask, have you submitted that letter somewhere else or something like that? And if you have, you know, maybe they'll say, well, no thanks. So you have to kind of consider that, you know, whether or not, you know, the newspaper wants that letter to be exclusive. But we are out of time. Thank you so much. Go forth and get published. All right.